What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hi, this is James Mercer from The Shins.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Lotte Hurst, co-founder of The Cure.
This is Huey Lewis giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back with an exciting second season. We peel back the layers on music's most iconic hits with legendary artists like The Killers, Heart, The B-52s, Violent Femmes, Jewel, Huey Lewis, Modern English, and more. To keep the music flowing, we'll be sprinkling in classic episodes from our archives between each new one. So check out The Story Behind the Song wherever you get your podcast.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Do you read Stephen King? Good news. There's a club for you. The Losers Club. Every Friday, us losers journey through the never-ending wastelands of King's Dominion. We sink our teeth into each of King's novels, dive deep into the lore, and review every adaptation. Even better, we're always having guests over. Thomas Jane, Will Wheaton, Mary Lambert, Mick Garris, the list goes on. So what are you waiting for? Join us as we read on through long days and pleasant nights.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's an audio interview series presented by WFPK, independent Louisville at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Big hello to all the subscribers. Thanks for checking out the series every week. In fact, three times a week if you keep up with all the interviews. Hopefully, if you haven't already, you can give us a rating, leave a review as well. If you're not a subscriber, take that moment to hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcast from. Keep up with all the interviews that we do put out Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. You can do so at iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Stitcher, Acast, any of the places you get your podcast from. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, Kathy Valentine of The Go-Go's. We're going to be heading back to 1994 for the compilation that came out 25 years ago called Return to the Valley of the Go-Go's. Now, not only was this a cool compilation at that moment, but it is still a cool way to listen to The Go-Go's. If you're looking for an overall arc of their entire career, this is a really good place to start, or just to pop into whenever, even if you're already a hardcore fan. And Kathy and I are going to talk about several different eras of the compilation, starting with the late 70s, when they were a punk band in a punk scene back in LA. In fact, that era has a really interesting bridge, the late 70s punk, to when they put this compilation out in 94, considering that punk had made its return by the mid-90s, thanks to bands like Nirvana and, of course, Green Day and, well, you know the history of that. And that wasn't lost on the band either. That's tied in not only in the lyrics to the hit song that came off of the record called The Whole World Lost Its Head, but who they were playing with. Kathy tells us stories about playing with Hole around that time and Green Day and the Riot Grrrl movement. And it's a fun fact. We didn't talk about this in the interview, but it is a fun fact that Nirvana had Pat Smear as the guitarist. Before Nirvana, Pat was in a band, a punk band called The Germs. And the very first drummer for The Germs was Belinda Carlisle, who would go on to help found The Go-Go's. The Go-Go's have a direct tie to Nirvana and the grunge movement. And it's with ideas like that that we'll also discuss why it's ridiculous that the Go-Go's aren't in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They haven't even been up for a nomination yet. So all of that's in there. We're also going to catch up on what the band's been doing lately. There is a documentary about the Go-Go's in the works. There has been a Broadway musical that just wrapped up its first run and is finding its way down to, even as Kathy says, high schools putting it on. And she'll also update us on what she's got going on outside of the Go-Go's. There is a biography, a Kathy Valentine biography coming out next year, and she's doing a soundtrack to go along with it. So hang out for all of those details as we talk about the 25th anniversary of Return to the Valley of the Go-Go's. It's Kyle Meredith with Kathy Valentine of the Go-Go's. So, you know, there's always a lot of nostalgia tied to the Go-Go's, but I wanted to kind of concentrate first on 1994 because it's the 25th anniversary of Return to the Valley of the Go-Go's. And by 1994, I mean, the band had already came and gone and came back again. And maybe we just kind of start there. What did it feel like to be a Go-Go in 1994?
I felt, you know, very grateful. You know, obviously I think we had not played together in quite a while. We kind of reunited after breaking up in 1990 and we split apart again. And so it was kind of the first time in a while we had gotten to play and stuff. And it was really exciting to work on something new. That was the best thing of all to do, you know, to write new material. And that's what made it seem very, it felt valid, you know, it felt relevant to be doing new stuff.
And you got three, you know, songs there towards right at the end of the compilation with Good Girl, Beautiful, and The Whole World Lost Its Head, one of your compositions there too. Why was it not a full-length record? Was there any reason at that point?
Well, the impetus wasn't to make a record. The IRS had decided to do the retrospective to kind of cover everything that hadn't been covered in the band's history, I think, and to have an oral chart of the journey of the band. But for us, we felt like it wasn't enough, it wasn't enough to make an interesting package and to really be a journey that it should go up until the present. And the present didn't have anything. So we decided to make something that would bring it up to bring the journey of the whole retrospective up into the present day. And that was the impetus. It wasn't like the other way around where, oh, let's make a record and only write three songs for it and fill it up with other stuff.
Were those sessions any different from the ones in the past? I mean, obviously, you know, with history, the way it had played at that point, do you remember how those sessions went?
Yeah, I remember very well because, you know, we worked with a producer named John Porter, and John was somebody I was familiar with, and I really liked his whole aesthetic about music and his what he was into, and it brought another element. He was very, you know, very deeply enmeshed in rock and blues and just a very Catholic knowledge and breadth of taste and what he was into and what he liked. And bringing that to the band was really different because in the past we'd worked with Richard Goddard twice, who was fantastic, and Martin Rushen, who was also fantastic. But I think both of their strongest influences were a bit more narrower than John Porter. So I think the sound and the production really benefited from it. It was a departure for us. So the sessions reflected all of those new elements.
You know, looking at the lyrics of The Whole World Lost Its Head, and you've got that line in there, Mary ate her little lamb and punk rock isn't dead, which I don't know if you meant it to be, but was so well timed, you know, for that era, too, considering, you know, punk rock had made its, you know, breakthrough once again with the latest wave and Nirvana and everything that happened there, as history told us. And when you consider, like, if a band is around long enough, if a band is around especially over decades, you get to a point where, you know, there's a lull and then eventually it comes back around and you start seeing all the influence and all the, you know, bands saying how big of an influence, you know, that band was to them or whatever. What I'm getting to here is it seemed to happen so much quicker with the Go-Go's. Like, here you are only in the second decade, and you have bands right away saying, we love the Go-Go's. They were a huge influence on us. I mean, I remember, what was it, Everclear doing Our Lips Were Sealed, and that was still in the, you know, late, early 90s or something like that. And it seems like there was a lot of that going on, right?
Yeah, and a lot of the Riot Girl bands and stuff. And I remember the 90s was when, I don't know if they still do this, but a lot of the radio stations were having these big concerts with Christmas concerts and this and that. And it'd be like a radio station and all the bands of the era would be on these. It was kind of like, I think it might have predated some of the big, you know, annual festivals. Mm-hmm. So we were doing a lot of those. And sometimes there would be bands that, you know, we were kind of worried we would feel like, you know, the Dinosaurs or something. But instead, we got so much credit and acceptability. One of the shows we played with Hole, and, you know, we were scared. We were scared what Courtney was going to say. And she went up and said, if it wasn't for the Go-Go's, I wouldn't be here. So it was really nice to kind of get that acknowledgement and that recognition at that time. It's appropriate that we'd be talking about this today when the Rock Hall nominees came out.
Oh, right.
And the Go-Go's were once again overlooked. You know, we've been eligible for some time, and we've never even made it onto the nominating list. And it kind of amazes me that how overlooked we are, considering that the influence was quite acknowledged in the 90s, maybe not so much now, because as you get further and further away, you know, there's probably more girls starting bands now because of Avril Lavigne than the Go-Go's. but you know, as you get further away, that influence maybe starts looking diluted or something. But the 90s, like you say, it was close enough to when we had been at our heights of our success. There it was a strong influence, and it was felt and it was acknowledged, and that was a nice thing. If I had known then that we would go on to be ignored, I would have been even more happier about it.
This is the way it goes. Well, and it is nice, because, you know, this compilation that we're talking about with Return to the Valley of the Go-Go's does paint that really well. I mean, when you go back, and I know that, you know, there's that first little section there predates your time in the band, but you know, they, as it's been told, I mean, the Go-Go's pretty much came from, if not the punk scene, then a punk sound.
I would say the punk scene. I think the way I understand it is, I was in LA. I wasn't in the Go-Go's, but I was in LA, and I was definitely in the clubs and seeing all the bands that were happening. And the thing is that the punk rock scene really leveled the playing field as to who could have a band. And I think it really opened things up for women, you know, a lot. And it just seemed like it was about your message and your attitude and your passion and so many things, rather than your virtuosity. I mean, for me, when I first started playing, I thought I would have to be as good as, I was playing guitar when I first started, and I thought I would have to be as good as Jeff Beck, you know, before I could have a band. And then all of a sudden there's the Ramones and the Pistols, and I'm like, oh, well, wait a minute. Huh. I can do this now.
Yes. Didn't I read Susie Quattro had also, that was one of the moments for you, was that right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, that was before punk rock.
Right.
That was when, for me, that was when I realized that she was the first woman I saw being a rock star. And there had been others. There had been others, but I didn't know about them, because I guess if a female band that was maybe got together and was playing in the 60s, if they didn't become... Herman's Hermits or something and become like hits on the radio, it was deemed irrelevant. But I think for girls, for young teenage girls, it wouldn't have been irrelevant at all to have seen or known about the early bands, but you didn't see a lot of them. I didn't even know about Fanny until 1981. Didn't even know there was a Fanny. So there were a lot of bands, a lot of women playing music, but they didn't always filter down to the girls in the 70s that were starting, that were interested in playing. And I know Susie Quattro is what made me realize I could be a musician, or I was already playing guitar, but it didn't occur to me that I could be in a band and be a rock star or a pop star. And I know that she was the same. It was the same deal for Joan Jett. I mean, Joan worshipped Susie.
She's got a Susie's got a new record out, and it's fantastic. If you haven't heard it,
no, I haven't. I would love to hear it. Who produced it?
I'm not sure who produced it. It's called No Control. I don't know. It's Susie Quatro. It sounds like Susie Quatro. It sounds exactly like I'd want it to sound like too. It's really really good.
I got to meet her a few years ago and give her an award at a women's music conference, and it was just such a cool thing after all these years to get to tell her how she had changed my life and be the one to present her with this kind of Vanguard award. It was really cool.
I'll kind of pull it back in here too. Although while we're kind of around in that area, you know, so as we're looking at this compilation, when you do finally pop in to the band, you brought some of what would become hits with you. I mean, Vacation came from, it predates the Go-Go's, right?
Yeah, Vacation I had recorded in the Textones, and we kind of rushed into our second record and weren't really prepared material-wise, but we had already started doing Vacation. I had shown that song to Charlotte when we were hanging out one night, and as soon as it got worked up, our very first live concert video was filmed in I think it was the end of 81 at Palos Verdes High School, and it was called Totally Go-Go's, and our very early version of Vacation is on that. So we were already doing it live, so that became one of the first ones that we worked up. And then another song I'd written from the Textone days made it onto the record, which is called We Don't Get Along. So, yeah, we kind of had to scramble to find material, and I had a few ready to go.
How similar or different were they from the Textones to the Go-Go's, those songs?
Vacation, when I showed it to Charlotte, she thought that it needed a stronger chorus, so the two of us wrote the chorus together. So you'll hear the same structure and melody and words, but the part that we worked on together was the Vacation, All I Ever Wanted Had to Get Away. The chorus, basically, we worked on that together, and then the hooks, like the intro, da 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 da. We came up with that in the studio. I don't think that was in the song that I wrote. It wasn't, but the Textones version was a little bit more thrashy, kind of like funky pop version.
Yeah.
And We Don't Get Along was a little bit more of a traditional rock and roll kind of song, which wasn't the Go-Go's exact direction, but we kind of did our own version of it.
I'll close out with that compilation because I did want to hit back on that single with The Whole World Lost Its Head. Ended up being a huge hit in the UK. But it's one of those songs that sort of finds re-relevance, you know, with every new era, how the songs kind of update themselves.
We have, I think, two or three times, and it's sad because I don't know if we have it documented, but two or three times when we've added that song into our touring set over the years, we've rewritten the lyrics.
Oh, really?
Yeah, to reflect the more current times. Because, I mean, some of the lines work, like you say, they can be slotted into any era, but there was so much crazy shit going on that all the time, but really now. We even rewrote the lyrics for last summer when we played the Hollywood Bowl, but because it was we were playing with the Philharmonic and it was like 4th of July, we kind of got dissuaded to do it because it was pretty harsh about what's going on now. It was pretty, I wish I had the lyrics. I'm sure I got them somewhere. But anyway, yeah, we've changed those lyrics to reflect the time as we added it into the concert set. Because we've toured, you know, pretty much since 94, 95, since that record came out. Yeah, we pretty much toured on a regular basis. And many times we would add Whole World Lost Its Head and update it.
Yeah.
And sometimes we'd pass the lyrics, we'd print out a bunch and pass them out to the people in the audience so they could sing along with us.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I mean, on one hand, it's oddly comforting to know that it's always been crazy to a point, although, you know, I was plenty old enough back then and I'm plenty old enough now to see the difference in what we're going through. And it does seem much crazier at this point, like what sometimes what I would give for what we thought was crazy in 94, you know, versus
now. Oh, yeah. I mean, nowadays, we could rewrite the lyrics to The Whole World Lost Its Head every week.
Right.
I mean, literally, it's like I sometimes I just have to, like, go, I'm not looking at the news. I'm not going to look at it anymore. I can't handle it. So, yeah, we could redo that one on a weekly basis, or definitely a monthly basis, probably this entire last couple of years. But, yeah, the one we wrote last year, it had a lot of stuff in it. It had, I'm sure I have them somewhere. There's probably YouTube live stuff of us doing other versions. We always keep Mary Had a Little Lamb. Or ate her little lamb.
Right.
We always keep that line.
It's a hell of a line. But it's my favorite line.
Yeah, Claudia Schiffer and all that stuff, that kind of got dated. So anything that was dated went out. And there's never a lack of material put in that song.
So coming up then, the documentary, is that really what's the big thing that's happening next?
Yes. Yeah, it is happening next. And I'm pretty in the dark about it. We still haven't seen a cut of it, and we still don't know when it will premiere. But we've been told by the director, who we have a lot of trust in, Allison Elwood, that it's one of, if not her favorite, one of her favorite projects she's ever done. And we're all very curious and really excited about it, because prior to this documentary, the only thing really out there was Behind the Music, which nobody in the band was thrilled with that. We really felt like they kind of form fit a narrative that what they wanted the story to be, and kind of didn't go into some of the really positive, fun, and influential aspects of the band. So hopefully the documentary will circle around and help that acknowledging relevance issue we seem to be having lately.
Documentaries are working so well right now. It seems like we're getting a lot, but each one of them seems to land with the impact that I would guess the artist would hope for. But I don't know. There's something in the air. There's something in the air right now, it feels like, for the Go-Go's. So
something significant about the three new songs off of Return to the Valley of the Go-Go's. Two of the songs, Good Girl and Beautiful, were both prominently featured in our Broadway musical, Head Over Heels.
Oh, right.
And they were highlights, and I was really happy when we had a good 6-month run on Broadway, and it's now appearing in regional theaters and theater groups and high schools. A lot of high schools are licensing this musical, which is great because of it's got so many themes of inclusion and love in all its forms. But one of the things I was really happy about was how they really mined the catalog and chose songs that hadn't had that much exposure. And both Beautiful and Good Girl were just standouts in the musical.
That's what I mean. I mean, with the musical going on, with the occasional reunion show you all have been doing, it's time. It's ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous, as you said, that the Go-Go's aren't in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
But I can't even blame them. I mean, they have a thing there where people that visit vote, on who they think should be nominated. And we're not getting those votes either. So it would be great to say, oh, those Rock Hall people, they have a vendetta against us. But you can't really, because it's just a general kind of overlook. Mm-hmm. We're just overlooked. And, I get it. It took me a long time before I started really crediting Susie Quattro. I didn't, when you're kind of in the present, you don't really go around talking about what made you
right.
want to do what you do. But as you get older and retrospective, I mean, now, especially I've written a memoir that's coming out in April 2020, and I'm super excited about this book. And I think with the book, which really, it's written from the point of view of a girl who decided she wanted to be in a band. Of course, I'm talking in the third person, and me, and wanted to be in a band, and traces that journey and the rise of the Go-Go's, and what, and from my perspective, the significance of everything we did together and accomplished. And I think with this book and the documentary hopefully some people will start speaking up, you know? I mean, we did some shows with Green Day, and, you know, the drummer Trey said that he learned to play drums by playing along to Gina on our records. So that always helps when artists speak up, you know, that, and I don't know how, as they go into other female-centered bands, I mean, Whitney Houston and Pat Benatar are nominees this year, and I don't think they would ever say that the Go-Go were an influence, but there's a lot of females in the 90s that had bands that I think would say that we did the same thing for them that Susie Quattro did for me.
I love the Go-Go's. I mean, you all have put out some of my all-time favorite music, any excuse I can ever get to revisit it, I always take. I also wanted to ask about what you've got going on outside of the Go-Go's too. Any solo singles or another Blue Bonnets? Are you going to do that? What's next after this?
Like I said, I have my book coming out, which has been my focus for the past 3 years. It took me to write that, and I finished it, and I've been writing a soundtrack to it. And it's been one of the most creative and fun and exciting musical things I've ever done. And I really like that because I'm 60 years old and I've been in bands nonstop for 45 years, basically. And there's not a lot of females walking around that can say they have not been in a band ever in 45 years. You know, I mean, when the Go-Go's aren't playing, I'm still playing. I'm still in a band and I'm still playing. And I really have enjoyed that. So with this, and I did do a solo record in 2005, but it's really just never been, you know, I kind of just always wanted to be a girl in a band. But doing this soundtrack for my book, it's just really cool to me to be doing something so exciting and new and different and cool at 60, after playing in bands for 45 years, that I'm still so excited. And I'm really loving it. And it will be something that will help promote the book and something to make my book appearances more interesting, because I'll be able to kind of play stuff that goes along with the chapters. It's completely inspired by it's a soundtrack, basically. It's not just a record, it's not just a song, it's a soundtrack. So it's very different and cool. And the Blue Bonnets just did a very short tour in support. We were supporting the Toadies, which is another band from that same era or what we were talking about. And that was super fun. Great guys, great audiences. That was really good. And the Go-Go's have work coming up this summer. So I'm really busy. I mean, I'm very fulfilled musically. And with this new thing of writing, I think I did a really good job on this book. And I am very much looking forward to continuing that as part of my career. I want to continue to write and write more books, because I think I'm good at it.
Yeah, I cannot wait to read it.
Thank you. I'm excited.
Yeah. Who's putting out the book, out of curiosity?
UT Press. They've released some really cool books. Vivian Goldman's, you know, Revenge of the Sheep Hunks, and Kristen Hirsch, the book she did on Vic Chestnut. And the book on a Tribe Called Quest. I mean, they're just doing so many cool. I couldn't be more proud to be affiliated with UT Press. I'm really just feel really honored that they asked me, and proud to be in their catalog. And there'll be an audio book too. So,
well, hopefully we can catch up again when that happens, when the book comes around. I'd love to talk to you about that as well. And Kathy,
I would love that.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time today and heading back in time a little bit with me. I so appreciate it.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Kyle.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, Kathy. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
My thanks, Kathy Valentine, the Go-Go's 25th anniversary of Return to the Valley of the Go-Go's. And all that she's got coming up, too, the bio, the soundtrack. It's going to be really exciting to keep up with Kathy, especially in the next coming year. And a big thanks to you, too, for checking out the series here. Before you get out, I hope if you haven't already, give the series a rating, leave that review. And if you're not subscribed, hit that subscribe button. We have new interviews every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists. Just type in Kyle Meredith With wherever you get your podcast from. Hit that subscribe button. After that, WFPK.org. That's where I do a show at at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's an hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, and interviews. WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound, they've got your music and film news. You can also find me at Twitter, at Kyle Meredith, Facebook/Kyle Meredith. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.